The music business was mean. Mean like Justin Bieber when a fan asks for a selfie. The road to fame was littered with broken dreams, broken hearts, and actual litter. And the air was thick with unanswered questions. In a grimy office above the noise and filth, two men worked tirelessly to solve these mysteries. Their names? Tony Blackburn. And his young apprentice, Ricky Wilson. The sign on the frosted glass door? Ricky and Tony, pop detectives.
Morning, Tony.
Morning, Ricky. How are you?
I'm really good today. Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. You might notice, I know we're on Zoom or
yes.
or another, any of those services you cry, but you can see me now, which is nice.
You've lost so much weight.
In the beard. I've had a shave. But I've also been dieting. Lockdown's not been kind to me, Tony.
Right, why is that?
I was eating far too much.
Binging?
I was binging. Yeah. Mm. I found a corner shop that did all my favourites. No Twiglets, though.
None at all.
They're out of season. No. They're like raspberries, aren't they?
Well, they don't look the same, but they are they're very...
Seasonal.
Seasonal. Yeah, they are seasonal. Except I found I found a petrol station just outside Kent that sells Twiglets. Every week I would buy at least 4 packets. Mm. So I'm really stocked up. I've got a whole garage full of them now. I'm amazed that the amount of times I've mentioned Twiglets that they haven't been onto me yet.
Yeah, well, you can just keep going. I think you should get some T-shirts printed. I was looking at T-shirts the other day, Tony, and found a thing online where you can go on and you can write anything you want on a T-shirt in any colour and then put a logo on it that they provide you, kind of thousands of logos.
Yep.
And I designed myself a Lenny Gamble T-shirt.
Lenny Gamble, what a great singer he was.
If you don't know, listener, then that used to be the pseudonym of Tony when he was the chart topper. So it said Lenny, then a pair of rolling dice underneath, then Gamble at the bottom.
Fantastic.
Putting what's off the record on the record. Ricky and Tony, pop detectives.
Okay, Ricky, I think it's time we got to work now. What's the latest from the stool pigeon?
Yeah, let's get cracking.
Hi, Ricky, Tony, Joe Muggs here. I'm in urgent need of your help. I've been rifling through some old cases from the hazy days of indie dance, and it seems that Michael Eavis still bears a grudge 30 years on against the Happy Mondays for the time they caused carnage at Glastonbury by bringing a laminator into the backstage area and printing their own Access All Areas passes, which they and their disreputable scally friends then flogged off as a sideline. Can this be true? If it is, it's one of the biggest scams of the 90s. We really need you to get to the bottom of this.
This is an interesting case, Tony. I don't know if you've got any relationships with any of the Happy Mondays. Have you ever met them?
Funny enough, no, I haven't. I've never met Sean. I've heard him a lot swearing on TV, and he got banned, of course, from Channel 4.
I know.
And, he's a character.
Yeah, he's the only person ever to be actually named in a document of a channel saying that this person's not allowed on their channel.
Live. It's not live. Live on the channel.
You can pre-record him, so that's okay. But, the story goes that in 1990, when the Happy Mondays were asked to play the Pyramid Stage, they took their own laminator, Tony.
Wow.
I know. And they made...
I love laminators.
Oh, I know you do. Mm. And they made extra Access All Areas passes for the crew and all their mates. Michael Eavis is said to have been mad for them for years afterwards. I'm not surprised. I've always wanted a laminator. Have you, Tony?
I've got one.
Have you got one in your house?
I do have one, yeah.
Really? What do you laminate?
Not a lot.
Don't get too graphic.
Well, I got the laminator, and then I forgot why I got it, so I've never actually laminated anything.
Right. So you.
So I suddenly realised, I saw in an office somebody had a laminator, and he was laminating something, and I thought I'd like one of those.
Yeah.
So I got one of those. They're not very expensive. And then I thought, well, what can I laminate? What have I got to laminate? And so far, I bought it about 10 years ago, and I haven't laminated anything yet.
Really? So,
but I'm looking forward to laminating something. If you've got anything that you'd like laminated, I'd like to laminate it for you.
Well, you could laminate some ID badges for us.
That would be great.
The agency.
Yes, I can do that.
I tell you what would be good to laminate. Recipes, because then they're wiped clean.
That's true.
If you've got any recipes, you could laminate them.
Well, I've got no recipes either, because if I had some recipes, I would have laminated them by now.
Yeah,
but so far, it's been a complete waste of time buying it, to be honest with you.
Well, it wasn't a waste of time for the Happy Mondays. I think this is incredibly clever, right? Now, I know it's against the rules, But in my experience, when you... Right, if we're playing some dingy hole in the wall somewhere no one cares about, no guest list, right? As soon as it's mentioned we're playing Glastonbury, everyone comes out of the woodwork. I get probably a text every half hour from 6 months in advance until the day saying, can you get me in? And the answer is always no, because they don't give away many passes.
No.
I mean, management will probably be very cross with me here, but even our crew goes up in number around Glastonbury to get more people in.
Yeah.
Like, you know, hair and makeup. I'm only kidding. But, so, yeah, they are like gold dusk, you know, getting into Glastonbury, especially nowadays. Sure. So that is a very clever idea. And might be bending the rules slightly.
How many times have you appeared at Glastonbury?
Seven.
Have you? Seven times. That's seven a lot. Times.
I've played more, though, because once we played twice in one day.
Wow. Mm. That's quite something. I was invited to do my disco session at Glastonbury.
Really?
But unfortunately, it clashed with a BT gig I was doing at a fun fair in the north. And I've never been invited back since.
But have you ever been to Glastonbury at all?
To be absolutely honest with you, I'm not a great... a great lover of these sort of events.
Well, you don't know until you try.
It always rains, doesn't it? And I know somebody who got in free of charge there before they put a big wall up.
How did they do that?
They burrowed under a fence, I believe, or climbed over a fence in the days when it wasn't very secure.
I'll be absolutely honest with you, Tony. Now I go to festivals because I play them. In the past, I went to many.
Mm.
But... You know, obviously, this is naughty. Don't do this, kids. I've never paid to go into a festival. I had a method of getting in, which I might tell you now.
Yeah, can you tell me?
I'd walk up to the VIP entrance, dressed like I was in a band, and I'd walk through as if to just walk through and wait to get stopped. And as soon as I got stopped, I'd say, the manager is through there with our passes. And this is obviously before mobile phones, so it was a lot easier.
Sure.
And either they'd let me in, or they'd say, why haven't you got your pass? And I used to say, we just gave it away in a Radio 1 competition. And I don't know why, but that always
got me in. That got you in.
But not only into the festival, into the VIP festival. But one time, it was actually hard to get out of the VIP bit into the normal bit. So I had to spend the entire festival in the VIP section. Right, we'll get back to the case. Happy Mondays, laminating... passes to Glastonbury. And there's only one way to get to the bottom of this case, and that's by going right to the source. I know a man, he's in my Rolodex, who was there. The former manager of the Happy Mondays, Nathan McGough. Let's try and get him on the line. Should we try and get him on the line?
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. Yep.
Caller joining. Caller joining.
Come in, Nathan. Are you there?
I'm here, Ricky. Hi, Ricky. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Hi, Nathan. Nice to have you with us. So you were the manager of the Happy Mondays. How did you survive that?
I've been asked that question a lot of times. It definitely was a roller coaster ride. I think how I survived it was just by joining in and being part of the gang. I think that was how I survived it, basically.
Yeah, they don't seem the kind of people to be placated. So you have to kind of just muck in and take it where it goes.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Scary?
No, it was never scary. Well, the occasion when there were inter-band fights, that was pretty scary, being in a dressing room with knives being pulled or drum pedals being chucked at people. That occasion was a bit like hairy.
What, they were pulling knives on themselves?
Oh yeah. I mean, as a manager, I've actually managed a lot of bands with brothers, and there are always fights in those bands between the brothers. It seems to be a common occurrence.
I heard I heard a story because I met Marty Pello a few years ago, and you wouldn't think that Wet 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 were like this, but Wet 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 apparently had the biggest interband fist fights of all time. They'd have their manager clear out hotel rooms just so they could fight. To argue about something like the photo on the next album cover.
Yeah.
But they actually fight about it, and then whoever won got to choose.
Full body contact.
Full body contact, yeah.
Is it because they're touring around and they're with one another so much they just get on one another's nerves? Is that it? Or
I think that's it. I mean, if you're, I mean, families generally, you know, they love each other, but if you're locked in 24/7, you get frictions. Mm. I mean, it wasn't just the two Ryder brothers in the band. I mean, their dad was part of the entourage as well. Horseman, as he was known.
Why was he known as Horseman?
Because his surname was Ryder.
Oh.
See, the thinking, the logic in that, you've got to admire.
So I'll just run you through it. So the dad was basically their head stage manager, roadie, and he was known as Horseman. And his sons, Sean and Paul, used to call him Horseman. And they used to call their mum Horsewoman. And then Paul Ryder, who was the bass player in the band, was called Horse.
Yeah.
So everyone called him Horse within the band. Yeah. And Sean Ryder's name within the band was X, because he was the horse with no name.
Oh, there you go.
So there's a rundown on the Ryder family in that. There was quite a few fights between Sean and Paul. I remember Horseman running on stage at a gig in Cleveland and punching Sean out on stage because Sean had thrown a tambourine at him because he couldn't hear his monitors. There was a lot of stuff went down like that.
It's really interesting to me because I've been in a band for 15 years and we've never had a fight because we like the money more than we like fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we even talk to each other about anything. And Grace, my fiancée, finds this very disturbing.
Yeah.
When I'm at home grumbling about it, she's going, why do you say something? I said, that is not how you keep a band together. You sweep things under the carpet, bottle it in, push it down. But it keeps you going.
Yeah, it's one way, or you can have it out in the open.
Yeah.
I mean, I have managed bands that don't fight with each other, and that's really nice, a management experience. Yeah, it's nicer than the full body contact management, for sure.
Tell us about this incident in Glastonbury, because we're really interested in that and the laminating passes.
Yeah, what was your involvement in that?
I mean, about 2 months before, the band released what was to be their biggest ever single. It was a track called Step On.
Yeah.
Often voted the best ever record from a Manchester band, you know. And that was released in April, and it just exploded all over radio. And it just propelled the band into the limelight, and they ended up playing Manchester Arena and Wembley Arena. And sort of out of the blue, around that time, we were approached by Glastonbury, or an intermediary acting on behalf of Glastonbury, to headline the Friday night. Now, I don't think any of us had even been to a festival, let alone played one. Now, the Mondays had an entourage of about 40 to 50 people that used to roll with the band everywhere, because that was just the nature of the group. And we generally had a guest list of 200 people for any show anywhere in the country. So we had a big firm that we used to roll with. You know, these kids didn't go to art school and they weren't student types. They were like in their own, they were in their own vein, and they were unique. They were from Salford. So I was in touch with Glastonbury and about it. I was like, right, we're going to need like 45 guest tickets. You know, we are headlining after all. And they were like, well, no, we can't do that many. You get one each. And I was like, well, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
So after a bit of to and fro, they agreed to give us, I think they gave us like 15 guest tickets in all. Well, the laminates turned up at my office, the AAAs, and we were like, we got to fix this problem. So we went to Prontoprint and we made a copy of one. And then we bought a laminating machine and we just knocked up 60 of these AAA Access All Areas Glastonbury passes. We didn't think we were doing anything wrong. We tried to be reasonable with Glastonbury. And so these were given out to all our entourage and girlfriends and everybody else, but also to our T-shirt boys. And our T-shirt boys were basically these little firmer kids who, if you go to a gig and you buy T-shirts on the street, either going into the show or coming out of the show, those T-shirts are bootlegs and the band or the merch company sees nothing of it. And that's called the out in merchandise terms. And anything you buy inside the venue, which is official, that's called the in. So the out is always run by these street gangs from either Manchester or Liverpool. They control a whole business all over the country. So I approached the head of like the firm, a little fella called John the Phone, and he was called John the Phone because he had one of those massive mobile phones in the late 80s, which was half as big as he was, basically. But he was a very sharp, cool kid. And I approached them as like, we don't have an official merchandiser. You're doing a ton of money on the out in the street. What if we offer you the role of being our official merchandiser for Happy Mondays, and you do the in and you do the out, and then everyone gets a cut of everything? Well, that was brilliant. So that's how we rolled. But these kids basically are bootleg merch guys and ticket scalpers and all that. So that's what they do. So we gave them four of these fake passes so they could get into Glastonbury to sell our merch. Lo and behold, they've decided to go and make up 200 of these.
Where did they get that idea?
from us. Yeah. They're like, these are great. We'll make up 200 and then we can just work the gates. I mean, Glastonbury, those days, it kind of was like the Wild West meets Mad Max on acid. You know, it was pretty out there. And it was, you know, it wasn't the well-oiled, well-policed, you know, machine that it is today. The tickets for Glastonbury that year in 1990 were, I think there were £38 for the whole weekend. Yeah. And our kids were basically walking people in for 20 quids at a time. Or if you look pretty cool and you wanted to pay 30, you could get a full Axl Rose laminate and keep it and get backstage. So we ended up basically with a massive entourage there, like a 100-legged centipede on ecstasy in the artist backstage where our tour bus was always parked up. Great party going on. And we thought, well, all was good with the world, but little did we know that the kids were working the gates and all of that stuff. Now, the show went great. It was really good fun, and the Saturday we were having a great time. But what we didn't know in terms of, because we didn't know the score at Glastonbury, is if you want to sell anything, you've got to get a trader's license or hand your merchandise into Glastonbury's official merchandise store, and that's what you do. But our kids weren't doing that. They were just rocking up everywhere on site selling Happy Mondays merch and making a lot of money hand over fist, as well as all the money off the gates that we were scalping. And the security that year, they were a bit too tasty. You know, these boys from Birmingham and Bristol. Compounded with the fact, like, that the travellers who'd always got to Glastonbury for free, a lot of them were getting grief off this security. So our kids were getting chased all over the site by these security guys trying to shut them down. There was these fights breaking out with the travellers, which it really kicked off at one point. And I'm talking about a pitch battle with wooden staves and petrol bombs being chucked and vehicles being driven at people between the travellers and security. It was all pretty crazy. But we were kind of backstage just rocking up, doing our own thing, a bit oblivious to all of that stuff, really.
And you say you weren't scared. I'm scared listening to you.
I mean, just to underline or to conclude the Glastonbury story, there was a knock on the door of the tour bus at 6:30 on the Sunday morning. And I opened the door and there was four Land Rovers and about 20 security. And they're like, right, we know what you've done. You know what you've done. And basically, you're out of here. So they actually drove us off the site on the Sunday morning. Yeah, two Land Rovers in front, two behind, just to make sure, you know. But our T-shirt kids were still out there working it and getting chased everywhere. So John the Phone had about 18,000 quid in cash on him that they'd been from working everything. So he gave it to John the Doc, who was a little 16-year-old kid who used to work for us, who had lips like Kim Kardashian. He'd be pretty fashionable now, actually. But he was known as John the Doc, and they put him on the back of a trial bike and drove him off the site with all the dollar. And John got kidnapped by security and took to a cottage just off the site. And they tied him to a chair, and he said, you're staying here until you hand over the cash. And he wasn't having that, because his dad was one of the old Quality Street firm in Manchester, like the crime guy. He was like, you can chop me arms and legs off, I don't give a you're not getting a out of me. And he just stayed there tied to the chair going, chop me up, I don't care, you're not getting a penny.
Wow.
So they let him go, and then everyone got safely back to Manchester, you know, all about, you know, fair few grand richer than we were when we went down there on the Friday.
Amazing.
And who was handling, okay, those kids were handling the passes. Who was handling the drugs?
Well.
Watch it.
In 1990, that was like the second Summer of Love was happening. But we were already on our third Summer of Love, you know, Happy Birthday. We were what's called early adopters, because I remember Sean Ryder went on a sort of sabbatical to Amsterdam in the spring of 1977. He sort of disappeared from Manchester for 3 months. And it was like, oh, he's in Amsterdam somewhere. Anyway, he sort of was well connected with a few of the, like the Manc boys who lived in Amsterdam and used to work inverted commas in Europe. and he hooked up with a friend of his called Fatneck, I think his name was.
Right, good. I can imagine him because all these names are very useful for identifying people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't think he was wanted by Interpol or anything like that under that name. But Sean came back with a bag of, I mean, this is sort of common knowledge, so I'm not telling tales here, but he came back in the summer of 87 with 5,000, with a bag of 5,000 top quality ecstasy tablets. And to my knowledge, this was the first time that anyone had even brought E or put E into Manchester.
He had 10,000 when he set off.
he may well have had. So, you know, I think it was like we can make a bit of money, but I think what he was tuned on to was like, this stuff's going to go off and go big, and I'm going to turn everybody on. And of course, the Hacienda, which was owned by Factory Records, which was the wonderful record label from Manchester, Happy Mondays were also signed to and sponsored by. There was a corner of the club known as Acid Corner, where Sean and Bez and all their gang and all the kind of sneaky Manchester kids used to hang out. So they were knocking out these great ecstasy out of that corner and just turned it on. And then the Hass started a hot night, which was like a rave night. And it all just kicked off from there. But of course, once things got going, that task was left to people like Terry Chemical or
Eddie Terry Reed. Chemical.
Yeah.
The thing I'm thinking about being a
or Bobby Gillette or whoever, you know,
because he had a shave. Yeah. The thing I'm thinking about being a manager back then is I'm pretty well behaved, but I get about 5 phone calls in the like 2 hours before a gig, asking where I am. Right now, at Glastonbury. They all made it to stage, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was easy because basically we rocked in on a tour bus.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, the luggage holes that go along the bottom of a coach?
Yeah.
We just opened those doors. So basically Sean just spent the whole weekend just hanging out in the luggage hole.
Right.
doing his thing.
Yeah.
So he was easy to find. He wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a pretty good disco going on backstage, rave party there. So, you know, Bez wasn't leaving anywhere either. So, yeah.
So, all right, yeah.
That was pretty easy.
When they were on stage, did they actually know they were performing at Glastonbury?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Tony, like, no one was completely out of it.
No.
You know, but it was great to headline. I mean, the music industry pretty much ignored Happy Mondays for quite a few years, you know. And when it went off.
It was a real moment. So even even a band like the Mondays were, you know, they knew that it was important to the headlining.
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that the band actually had a really good work ethic because people's perception of them is that it's just a party band. But they had a really good work ethic. They rehearsed pretty much every day. You know, they worked hard. You know, I think underneath it all, I don't think anyone gets to be successful when they actually unless they put the hours in.
Yeah.
And they definitely did.
Is it true that you Sean was sent to Barbados to sort of recover from sort of drugs and things like that? And they did an album at Eddie Grant's house.
Yeah,
we did. And they started selling some of the studio stuff off to pay for the drugs. And he was spotted selling Eddie Grant's sofa, I think it was.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yes, pretty much nailed it. If you want a bit of the lowdown on that,
please.
He wasn't in a good way. He sort of he fell into using smoking heroin and had a bit of an addiction problem. And we wanted to make an album. And so Barbados was the only place in the world I could find that had a recording studio where there was also no heroin on that island. None at all. So we were like, great, we'll go there, drink a bit of rum, make a record. Unfortunately, what I didn't know was that it was flooded with crack cocaine because it was on the route from the Medellin cartel from Colombia through the Caribbean. And you could literally buy crack for about $2 a rock. So a few members of the band soon burnt through all the PDMs and the money that they had. And so Sean took to basically stealing furniture out of Eddie Grant's house and swapping it at Six Roads, which was a little ghetto a few miles down from Eddie's studio. And literally, they caused absolute mayhem on the island. And he lost his heroin habit, but he got himself a nice big crack habit.
The interesting thing, for me and Tony, is we've done a lot of pop detective work over the last two series. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they turn out to be false. Now, we've heard a lot of stories about the Happy Mondays. Mm. And are there any that you've heard that are false? Because there you go. You can't, but you know, they're a rich seam in the pop detective world of pop myths, and most of them are true. Mm-hmm.
I have so many stories,
and it's the widely told story that Sean held the tapes to ransom. That's true as well.
That's in 24 Hour Party People.
Uh-huh.
I think basically that we did try to do that, but it didn't quite come off the way that we wanted it.
Right.
So you have to remember, we came back from Barbados with a recorded album that had no vocals.
Right.
None. Apart from a bit of gibberish.
Okay.
Yeah.
It must be very funny for you, though, watching now and seeing Sean on Celebrity Gogglebox.
Yeah, I mean, it's great because, you know, I still speak to him. You know, you've got a new Sean now. You know, he got himself sorted out, married. Had a couple of kids, got a lovely family, you know, he's left all that behind him. And we got a new Sean, bright, shiny TV Sean, who's great on telly. I mean, I've saw Bez recently. He looks great, you know, he lives off the land.
Sean himself, his work ethic carries on because he's holding down two bands, two jobs. That's what you should call him, two jobs Sean. And seems to be ploughing on. Got a tour next year and stuff like that. So it's good, right?
Yeah, they're in a good place. I think the work ethic was always there. Unfortunately, drugs got in the way, but you know that's a lesson learned. You know, everyone's in a pretty good place, to be honest.
Yeah.
I am Sean is Bez's.
Do you still have any of those hooky laminates that you made?
No, I don't. But if you ask John the phone or John the dog, right, they'll probably.
I don't think I want to talk to them. Thank you for speaking to us. We could base a whole series around you, Nathan.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, yeah. If you, we'll be in touch.
All right.
We'll get one of our people.
Thanks a million, Tony.
Lovely.
Pleasure.
The ceiling fan whirled around as slowly as a sun-stroked fly. Ricky and Tony, pop detectives.
Well, Nathan was fantastic, wasn't he, Tony?
Amazing. He certainly didn't hold back.
No.
It sounded like, I don't know if you got the impression, it seemed like a bit of a dodgy...
Yeah.
I think we should
absorb him into our network, because I think he'll be very useful in the future, because he seems to have his ear to the ground and or nose to the ground. Which do you have? Ear something?
I think an ear to the ground might be better. A nose to the ground would be quite painful, actually.
Yeah,
and you'd be groveling the whole time, which is the way I got most of my jobs, actually, to be honest with you.
But he was great, and from him I've managed to procure the number of Sean Ryder.
Put that by me again. You've got his number?
I've got Sean's number, so maybe we should talk to Sean about it. But from literally the horse's mouth, or X's mouth, as he
X's mouth, yes.
So we should speak to Sean Ryder himself. Should we give him a call?
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm a bit nervous about this.
So am I.
Caller joining. Caller joining.
Sean, are you there?
Aye. All right.
Say hello, Tony.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Tony.
Ah, lovely, lovely to see you, and thanks very much for sparing the time to be with us as well.
Ah, pleasure, mate. Pleasure, you're a legend.
Ah, it's very kind of you. So are you. Good gracious me.
I'm going to make you feel really old here, Tony, because when I was going to infant school and junior school and you was doing the breakfast show, late 60s, early 70s, I used to listen to that, and that was our going to school radio show.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. You've said some very nice things about me in the press as well. I do appreciate that. Very kind.
Well, you're a Northern Soul hero, mate.
He is.
Lenny Gamble.
Yeah.
You didn't buy it, did you?
No.
Not at the prices that you wanted it back in the day.
What we were going to... Me and Tony's thinking about making a new record. And we're always looking out for, you know, someone to help us out. Because, you know, I think he's got the fan base.
Yeah.
I'm going to get some producers guys to work with him. He's written some songs, but they need padding out a bit.
Yeah,
but right. we might be calling you to add a little spice to it.
Oh yeah, I'll add some spice.
Well, Sean, I've been turned down by Kaiser Chiefs, so I'm trying to get now into Black Grape. What do you think?
Yeah, do that.
Well, we've been hearing about Glastonbury.
Yeah.
And what happened there? And tell us a little bit about it, because you're laminating. Tickets, I gather, to get so you can get people in. Is that right?
Yeah, that's well. I'll tell you the proper story now, because believe it or not, I wasn't drunk or really off my head on ease and acid. I mean, I was a full blown heroin addict then, and I spent most of that Glastonbury in the luggage compartment of our tour bus with a shitload of tinfoil and a load of my smackhead mates and. I'd run out of gear because we'd been there for a few days and we got some of our pals to come up from Manchester. This famous pal of ours, Chubbsy, and his missus who used to travel all over the world and the planet and, you know, bringing me all sorts, you know, what I needed. Yeah. And they came up to Glastonbury and we had no backstage passes left. So basically we had a laminate and what else we needed.
Laminator,
yeah. And we made a couple.
Couple.
Right? Yeah. Couple. Well, this is where it goes, you know, it goes a bit, you know, rock and roll legend tackle. We made a couple and brought them in. But obviously, people that was working for us at the time as well, well, they made a couple extra.
Yeah.
A few extra. And then knocked a couple out. Yeah. But it wasn't like hundreds of them. It really wasn't. No, I mean, that's all that rock and roll bollocks. It wasn't. I mean, there's probably no more than 10.
Right.
Plus the two that I did, because we put a stop to it. And Michael Eady still goes on about it today. He's still pissed off about it today, you know. I mean, last time he saw Bez a few months ago, the first thing he did was start going on about that. And it's like, come on, a load of kids with behavioural problems.
I mean, I've been to Glastonbury a few times and they are stingy with their passes. It's really hard to get your girlfriend in or wife or anything like that. You have to beg. And we've had to put them in as crew before just to kind of like sneak them in. So they don't give you enough passes, and if they don't give you enough, then I think you're justified, right, in getting, because if you're headlining as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's when the trouble starts. Although we do get, I mean, it's not unusual when they say to Bez, like back in the day, you know, how many passes do you want? And he would literally say, I want 100.
Right.
You know, 100 just for himself.
Yeah, we've got one of them in our band.
It's a bit mad, but that was it really. There wasn't that many done. I mean I was on an off-site as well. I was staying in an hotel locally, you know, being a mad rock and roller back then, you know. I had a girlfriend on site and they had one at an hotel. You know, so I'm nipping backwards and forwards, you know, smacked out of my brain, but still.
How did you keep your energy up?
Well, heroin.
Oh, right. A couple of pear ciders, and you were,
We hear that
you can walk anywhere.
We hear some wonderful stories, Sean, about the Happy Mondays and a few fights that broke out.
Tell us about those. What, with the band?
Yes.
Between ourselves or?
Between yourselves, and I gather.
Yeah. Oh, we've had legend. I mean, it's brothers as well. I mean, you know what it's like having brothers in bands, you know. I mean, and my old bloke as well. I mean, my old bloke, you know, he worked for us. He started off as our sort of manager and then road manager. And, you know, I mean, and so, you know, my dad would. I mean, the first time we did Wembley Arena, which is what, 10,000 people or something, you know. My old bloke was looking after the monitors and I can't hear the fucking thing. So I'm turning around saying, sort these out, you know, and he's just either ignoring me, you know, or he's not hearing, but I end up fucking sort these out, dickhead. And he heard that and he walks on stage in front of the full and bang, right on me nose. So, yeah, you know.
We're talking about a horse, is that right?
Horse
no, horse man. Our kid was horse. My dad was horse man.
Your ex.
I'm ex. Yeah.
Yeah. Horse with no name, indeed. But but it must have been mad times. You've got so many stories. You seem to remember them all, which is an astonishing feat. I'm pleased with that, because you get to pass them on for us, because it's very useful in our detective agency to once have some myths about a band that are true. And it seems like all the ones about your band are true.
Well, not if all of them are. I mean, there are some that get grossly exaggerated. I mean, some of you here are just like, I can't. Well, that's the thing, you know, right? I mean, the ones I can tell you about is because somebody's already jogged my memory. I mean, my pal Muzza, who was our road manager, tour manager for years. I mean, he was by my side 24 hours a day. So, I mean, he was pretty straight. So, I mean, he can remember most of them. Yeah. You know, I mean, the 90s really are a blur to me. You know, yeah. I mean, it was, you know, obviously it started getting all a bit ski-whiffy around 87, but by the time we hit 1990,
yeah,
you know, and you know, I was a human garbage bin, you know.
Right. But you're doing all right now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic.
Is it? We've heard lovely stories about you went to Barbados and recorded an album in Eddie Grant's studio and sold most of the studio and his sofa to get a few drugs. Is that correct, is it?
It wasn't his sofa. No, it was all his poolside and garden furniture.
Right. That's all right. Never touched him on sofa, right, but his garden stuff.
And his wood, and he had a shitload of wood, loads of it. So, you know, by the time we'd left that island, all the crack dealers had new houses. And then, of course, you know, we smashed all the cars, me and Bez, in the car hire place. I think the guy had about 20 cars. They all got, you know, smashed to bits and rolled and everything. Bez broke his arm. So the first thing you do when you crash a car is take the car battery out. You know, so yeah, we might be 10 miles away from the crack den, but you'd walk 10 miles with the car battery because that's what they get their electric off, you know, in their ups.
Oh, right, yeah.
So you could swap an ounce of stone for a car battery.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's useful to know. When,
hey, it is useful.
Cause you like
I'm sure the prices have changed now, you know, but it was like, 10 pence, you know, so you were just buying ounces of it.
But with all this going on, Sean, your work ethic was, and your managers told us that was 100%.
Oh yeah, I mean, our work ethic was really good, you know, phenomenal. I mean, when you think about what we did from 86 album, toured it for 2 years, another album, toured that for 2 years, another album, you know, like that, and then after that it was about a year off, and I went and did the Black Grapes stuff, so. Yeah. And then when we was, you know, we spent every day in our little studio and rehearsal places from, you know, 1983, 12 hours a day or whatever. We didn't think about money. We didn't think about being famous. It was just about being and making music and being in a band, you know.
Coming up to date now, Sean, a little bit at any rate. I mean, you like myself, you did I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and did exceptionally well. And I was watching a video of you getting bitten by a snake.
Oh, I love that video.
And I mean, you seem to. I mean, I got bitten slightly by a snake, but I mean, this snake really went for you, and you didn't seem to react to it at all.
Well, there's no point in panicking, is there? You know, it's like, you know, I mean, it's like dogs, and my dogs are geese. You know, I mean, you know, dogs can smell fear. You know, so you just, there's no point in that. I mean, it was worse in Barbados when. When we was there, there was a baboon. It was on the front pages of their Daily Mirror and their Sun, and it was called Jack the Ripper, this fucking thing. And it was literally going in at houses and killing people, killing families. And I'm walking down to the beach one morning, and this fucking thing dropped right out of the tree. Not if it was Jack the Ripper, but it was a fucking big baboon right in front of me. You know, and I'm rocked up, obviously, and it's like, it's looking at me like that, and I'm just going, oh, fucking kill you, cunt. Thinking it's like a dog that can smell fear anyway, and just walked past it and got on.
So you just smashed it in the head with a car battery, which you happen to be carrying.
Well, no, I was fucking grateful that it let me walk past.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy the experience out there with I'm a Celebrity?
Oh, and I loved it. Absolutely loved it. You know,
you're very good on it. Very good. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it was brilliant. You know, I mean, you know, at first when I got asked to do it, I was like, "Whoa, hey, I'm a serious artist. We don't do this sort of stuff." I mean, I've seen what Big Brother did for Bez because he won Big Brother. Yeah. So, you know, I thought, well, you know, I'm almost 50 years old, different time in your career. So I did it. And you know, my main problem, I thought, was that I wouldn't get on with any of the people. But it was all brilliant.
Now, Sean, we're watching and enjoying you and Bez on Celebrity Gogglebox.
Mm. Yeah.
And I have to say, and I don't take this the wrong way, but you have terrific legs.
Do I? I thought they looked like sort of big pink pigs trotters or something.
No, and my wife and I were watching it, and we both agreed. Those shorts, you've got terrific legs. I mean, just made for Gogglebox. Well,
Tony.
I'm quite interested. How do they do that? I mean, do they put a camera in your house and you just sit there?
Oh, yeah. They have a couple of cameras in there. I mean, we had to film it different this time because of the corona.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Virus thing. So we had to live. Well, we're still living with it. Yeah.
Sell it to Chubbsy.
Yeah.
Or get on the phone.
I probably would have done that in the past.
Are you enjoying doing it?
Oh, it's great. I mean, me and Bez, you know, we are in a sexless marriage like Laurel and Hardy, really, you know. So, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, that's how we are. And the more we have to drink, the sort of more stone age we get.
And then, of course, next year with Black Grape, you're doing a massive tour again as well. So you still enjoy the touring and the music and everything?
More than ever. You know, I mean, when we first started off as kids, it was brilliant. And then, you know, you got to the stage where you're on that treadmill and hamster wheel and it's all, oh, and I hate you doing all the songs and everything. But now, you know, at the age I am now, I'm you know, pushing 60, so I'm more comfortable than ever, you know. So I really enjoy it again. You know, and I just do what I want. You know, I'm not away all the time, you know, so it's, I love it.
It is weird, and the coronavirus thing, because I wanted time off, and because I would have quit, like, about 6 months ago. But now I've had some time off, enforced. I'm like, I can't wait. Because now I'm like going, I actually do want a tour, and it's not something I need to do. It's something I want to do. But you forget that, don't you,
yeah,
at some points?
Yeah, absolutely. You do.
I think it's been good just to have this little break, hasn't it? And I hope it doesn't go on for much longer.
Loved it, mate. I've loved it.
Yeah.
I really have. I really liked it. You know, it's great. I've done a few voiceovers, you know, and I've got to watch every leading thing on Netflix and Amazon Prime, so, you know, and it doesn't really take much to, you know, for me to sit down, really, you know, and watch a bit of telly. I love it, you know, because I am a worker.
Well, the interesting thing is, Sean, that, you know, Ricky and I were pop detectives and we've been looking into these myths and trying to solve them, and every single myth about you is true.
Well,
and that's the great thing. I mean, you know, we've solved it. You've solved it. I mean, every single thing. Selling Eddie Grant's furniture and things like that, and all the drugs and everything—it's all—it's all true.
So do tell me.
We should—we should probably hold some back, Tony, because I mean, we could get a whole series out of you, though. So I don't know. I don't know why we're trying to pile it all on this one episode. Because I'd like to explore it some more. And if you've got anything to promote, we'd love to have you back.
Absolutely.
Of course, well, whenever you want. Yeah, I'm there.
I can't believe I'm sat here with two national treasures, Tony Blackburn and Sean Ryder. It's brilliant. I love it.
Well, you're back on tour next year. Is that right?
Yeah, we are. I mean, Black Grape tour next year. Whatever dates people have got for this year, it's next year. Because I'm putting the Mondays, apart from a few festivals, I'm putting the Mondays to bed for a couple of years and just trying to concentrate on Black Grape for a bit.
That's good.
Another album? Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Hey, Sean, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks very much.
You know, keep watching the television and keep those short trousers on.
Give Tony a treat.
Yeah, my wife's really enjoying it.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
With his brains and his looks, they could go places. Ricky and Tony, pop detectives.
So, Tony.
What a case.
I mean, I am exhausted, but very happy about this.
So am I. We sort of didn't have to do anything. They just said everything is correct.
Literally, wind them up and they just went for it and told us everything we needed to know. A few little discrepancies between the two stories, but I like that, because if they had exactly the same story, it sounds like, you know, when you rehearsed for a police questioning. So, but basically, the general gist was, yes, they had a laminator and they made passes. So that case is solved. But we also got a whiff of some other cases as well, which I was pleased about.
I think we've got to get them back and do another, because there's so much there, isn't there? I mean,
definitely
unbelievable. And I think it's a case solved, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But next time we should get them in the room together.
Yeah.
Because I think they could bounce off each other and like we could really get to the bottom of it. So maybe that'll be a new section on our podcast where we actually get people with differing versions of a story together and you, then you eke out the truth. Because we're all about the truth, right?
And sort of hopefully a fight will break out.
Oh, yeah.
That would be fantastic. The first time on any podcast a fight has broken out with a guest.
And luckily you've got your taser. So we can always, you know, and
we can always intervene
with the tasing. Yeah, but, well done, Tony. I'm saying well done to you. Well done, everybody.
No, well done,
Nathan McGough.
All of us.
Well done, Sean Ryder. Well done, Tony. Well, great myth busted and get the stamp out. I think.
Right, here it is. Case solved.
Right, if you've got any myths that need busted, and you must be inspired by that last episode, right? If you want to get in touch with us, it's Ricky and Tony Pod on Twitter, or you can email us podcast@rickyandtony.com.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Tony.
The music business was mean, but Ricky and Tony could do mean. They were born for it, like a mayfly was born to die at the end of the day. They slammed shut the filing cabinet, pulled the cord on the Venetian blind, threw on their trench coats, and headed out into the rain. Until next time.